You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 37. This minute opens with the ghost of an engineer, and ends with Shaw saying, "Hey, Fifield, where are you going?" Shaw and Holloway come racing down the hallway in pursuit of the hologram of the engineer. They watch as he collapses in the doorway and is decapitated by the door. Those doors don't fuck around. Why are they designed to drop with such speed and force? Here, the production comes to an end, and the humans cautiously approach. Holloway goes into defensive boyfriend mode and goes first. There's a quiet but mounting excitement shared by Holloway and Shaw, reminiscent of when they first discovered the Isle of Skye cave paintings. I had overlooked it in previous viewings, but they do have a solid relationship built on a shared passion. There are lots of little moments that seem like they genuinely share a connection. Obviously, this is not the central focus of the film, it's not a romantic movie. But paying closer attention to the two of them, I'm growing to understand why they are together, and also getting a sense as to who they might have been back on Earth. I think beyond pure physical attraction, they share common interests and goals. In a situation like this expedition, tensions are high and personalities get turned to 11, so they're more inclined to conflict, which I think goes to explain pretty much everyone in the crew. As Shaw and Holloway are getting excited over their find, Fifield cuts in with fear and apprehension.
"Oh my God, Holly, we found them."
"What do you mean, them?"
There are a number of deleted scenes and alternate takes in which Ellie and Charlie have quite a hostile relationship. I'm glad they didn't go in this direction. It wasn't necessary. What we get in the final cut of the film represents a more natural kind of dynamic. They don't always agree, but there's clearly a foundation of love and support. Charlie is a jerk, but in a believable way. He would have become even more one-dimensional had they gone the alternate path. David walks right up to the corpse and gets a good look at it for the crew back on the ship. It's hard to determine how rigid the engineer armor is. We know from later minutes that the head is perfectly preserved. The body is likely the same, so the armor has retained its shape. Is the armor responsible for such incredible preservation, or is there something in this environment keeping everything in a kind of stasis? We cut to Vickers and Yannick on the bridge.
"Son of a bitch. They were right."
"Did you want them to be wrong?"
I think the answer is that she really did imagine they would come all this way and find nothing, because that conforms to her perception of reality. Up until now, she has seen some impressive structures, but they could potentially be dismissed as naturally occurring. However, in this moment, she's being forced to reevaluate things. In this moment, I think we are watching her dawning realization that if aliens are real, and if they created us, what does that mean for life as she knows it? History, religion, science, culture, such a discovery would change the very foundations of our reality. It's a concept that has often been played with in science fiction, some kind of discovery that changes the world forever. But rarely have I seen it explored in a satisfying way. I would say Watchmen is perhaps the perfect example of an alternate reality. What happens to our world if Superman exists? But then, Alien has never really been about the world building. It hides more than it reveals, and I appreciate that. Plus, the discovery of engineers and xenomorphs and all the other crazy things in this world are generally only known to a small number of individuals. I have enjoyed the small glimpses of the world we get from the novelizations. It's nothing major, but it's nice to get a sense of the kind of society these characters come from. As far as we can tell, it is not unlike Blade Runner, an overcrowded, overpolluted cyberpunk dystopia. Speaking of, I am fond of the idea that Blade Runner and Alien are in a shared universe. I like the possibilities that presents, especially in regards to a world that has replicants and synthetics, and the moral issues that must raise. I think it's kind of a shame that Vickers is out of focus in this moment. It's an important scene for her character, and yet the camera holds on Yannick the entire time. I would either have had the focus change between them, or have them both in focus all at once. The latter can be tricky to accomplish. It often looks flat and artificial. But in this moment, I think some other type of filming technique was needed to really emphasize the emotions of this scene. Yannick wasn't even really the focus of this moment. He's just curious more than anything. He has no real stake in any of this. And yet, he's in focus and even gets an additional close-up shot all to himself here. Why didn't Vickers get the same? Or why was she not the focus of the shot that they shared together? The more I consider it, the less sense it makes. I don't know what they were trying to convey here. Cinematography is everything. It's easy to overlook as a passive viewer, but subconsciously we are responding to it. Bad camera work can keep viewers at arm's length, you know, allowed to see this world properly. That could be bad framing, focusing on the wrong thing, using the wrong technique, like close-up shaky cam instead of a wide shot or vice versa. How the story is framed is as much a device in the storytelling as anything else. All I can figure is that keeping us distant from Vickers was the intention. But why? Especially considering she's been the center of attention in previous scenes. Thinking more about the holograms, Ridley likes to do things as practically as possible. And from what I can tell, the engineers in the hologram were filmed practically, and a filter was simply put over in post-production. But I wonder if they just filmed one actor and duplicated him, or do they have multiple people in costumes? The former seems most sensible, but come to realize big-budget films don't always care about being sensible. After the crew find the body, Holloway asks David to read the hieroglyphs on the wall. We notice that the environment is starting to look increasingly artificial. As I've said before, everything we've seen until now could just be a product of nature. But all at once, they not only find solid evidence of life with the corpse, but it happened to have been killed by something that is undoubtedly artificial, the door. The surrounding walls are carved and decorated, while this tableau is quickly overshadowed by what we find on the other side of the door. It's good that this moment is given the sense of importance that it would have in reality. This alone is a monumental discovery. So while this isn't the most scientifically accurate film, it seems to at least respect that these smaller discoveries hold significance. It is scientific in spirit, at least. The minute ends with Fifield quitting. He just says he's out of there and walks off. I'm not opposed to the toughest looking guy actually being the biggest coward, but I think this is too early. There's not enough motivation. His life needed to have been threatened more, or maybe, as I've mentioned, give him a backstory. Give him PTSD. Have this trigger a negative memory. Something, anything. As it stands, it's just, it doesn't feel believable to me. Comes out of the blue. By contrast, Aliens does a great job of showing the tough, badass Marines fail and fall apart one by one. Why Game Over Man is so significant is because you got Hudson, Bill Paxton, who's been this real cocky, arrogant jerk up until this moment, finally breaking down. He's wandering around the background, freaking out, while Ripley and even Newt stand stoically in the foreground. They've gone through some terrifying shit, and now Hudson has been broken. By contrast, we have Fifield calling it quits in minute 37, completely unmotivated. The colonists in Covenant were tougher, and most of them were just civilians, and they saw scarier shit. Fifield is implying to be pretty experienced in these interplanetary missions. Hell, just have him run off screaming, "Oh God, not again!" And at least we have something to work with. Milburn can run off after him, and once he's calmed Fifield down from a panic attack, he can reveal something that happened to him on some other mission. You don't even need to get specific, but speaking of aliens, if they can get away with an offhanded reference to Arcturian Poontang, we can have Fifield make some reference to an alien encounter that doesn't factor into canon ever again. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. Update, yes, I did say my name is now Connor. I didn't mind the name Courtney, but I was getting real tired of people assuming I was a woman all the time. I mostly kept the name out of respect for my mother, but, well, things change. This is actually the second time I've changed my name. After my father abandoned me, I gave myself a new surname. I really admire Marvel's Agent Coulson, and he's got a cool name. It seemed fitting. And for the past few weeks, I've been obsessed with the game Detroit Become Human. The character Connor is just so badass. I love him. I've been fond of the name for a long time, and playing the game and really connecting to him as a character motivated me to change my name. I think I was just outgrowing my old identity, and I can't help but associate my original names with my creators. It feels good to get that distance, to be my own man, independent of them. Now I just have to fill out so much paperwork to legally change my name again, but it's worth it.